Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. Continuing in the book of John, and we've been hearing a lot about bread, and we're going to hear some more about bread this day. Jesus talks to the disciples who are questioning him. I'm reading from the sixth chapter, and you can read along up there, verses 24 to 35. So when the crowd saw that neither Jesus nor his disciples were there, they themselves got into the boat and went to Capernaum looking for Jesus. When they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, "Rabbi, when did you come here?" Jesus answered them, "Very truly I tell you, you are looking for me not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you, for it is on him that God the Father has set his seal." Then they said to him, "What must we do to perform the works of God?" Jesus answered them, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent." So they said to him, "What sign are you going to give us then, so that we may see it and believe you? What work are you performing?" "Our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Then Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is that which comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." They said to him, "Sir, give us this bread always." Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty."
There's a beautiful piece on August 2nd in the New York Times by a woman named Juliette McCour. And I want to begin with her telling of Gabby Douglas's story, because it's beautiful. She writes, "To become the Olympic champion in the individual all-around event, Gabby Douglas first had to leave everything she knew best. She had to pack up her bedroom in Virginia Beach, where she lived with her mother, two sisters and brother. She had to say goodbye to her two dogs who used to sleep in her bed and bid farewell to the beach where she loved to ride waves on her boogie board. But it was time to take the leap. However heartbreaking and awkward it would be, even at 14, Douglas knew that. So off she went, 1,200 miles to West Des Moines, Iowa, to train with a coach from China and live with a white family that she had never met. Douglas remembers thinking when she arrived in Iowa that she must be the only black person in the whole state. I was unpacking and saying, holy cow, what am I doing? And she's 16 now, and she says, it was like, where do I put everything? Oh, snap! I wish I could say it like her. Where are the spoons? I'd wake up and I'd say, this isn't my bed set. Where am I? As it turned out, Douglas did exactly what she needed to do to become an Olympic champion on Thursday. Her coach, Ling Chow, who had coached also the gold medalist Shawn Johnson, transformed Douglas into one of the best gymnasts in the world, helping her to skyrocket from just an average person on the national team to the top of her sport. And a couple with four young daughters became her second family, nurturing her in Iowa while her real family supported her from afar. That move was pivotal in Douglas's own story. Her aligning herself with this new family and with this new coach to become then the Olympic all-around champion, the first female black athlete to do so. She was confident that she'd win all along. Afterwards, this is part of her interview. "It was just an amazing feeling," she says, giggling, as only Gabby can in that beautiful voice. "And I was just like, believe, don't fear, believe, believe." Think how often we get caught up in Christian community about belief. And we think we know what that means, and then it kind of slips through. Or some people think they know what it means, and they want to hammer other people over the head. Do you know it? Do you have it? Belief can be a really tricky, hard, even violent thing. Somebody earlier this week shared his beliefs. You maybe heard about it. He's the CEO of Chick-fil-A, and his name is Dan Cathy. He came out, I like to say, sharing his beliefs, and his beliefs are against marriage equality. And so he wanted everyone to know this, and it's more than just belief. It's actually action. He's given his family and his company have given over $5 million to groups like the Family Research Council and the Marriage and Family Foundation. And it's that belief that inspired other folks around our country to stand up and share some of their beliefs, like we're not going to eat there anymore. And so a boycott started to emerge because folks' beliefs made them stand up to say we're not going to follow along. And then another person had to stand up and say, if you believe me, this is Mike Huckabee, and he says it to all of his fans, some 600,000 fans that he has, we're going to create something for all who believe, August 1st, Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day. And believe did they. They stood in really long lines and paid for fast food. The Elk Grove store actually ran out of produce early in the evening, which on my high horse, I want to say that's kind of ironic given the feeding of the 5,000 story that we read last week. It's kind of an interesting thing to hold in contrast there, but that's just digressing, so we'll keep going. The lines, they stretched, and on the surface, all people were doing was saying, I want to eat a chicken sandwich. That's really all they were saying. They're saying yes to chicken, but they had all kinds of layers of meaning underneath it. Some really saw themselves as standing up to buy a chicken sandwich to say, I am for the freedom of speech. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around how this millionaire, Kathy, how his freedom of speech has ever really been drawn into question. But for some people, that was the commitment that they were making, was this is an issue of freedom of speech. I believe in freedom of speech, and I'm going to stand and pay $3 and whatever cents to show you that. Others were believing in Jesus, and they wanted to show their belief in Jesus. So they stood in line to help us see that. And I think that there were other folks that they just actually believe that Chick-fil-A tastes good. So they wanted to stand in line and prove that as well. But belief was all over the place this last week. There's an author in Atlanta. Her name is Jackson Pierce, and she's hysterical. Her video blog was very funny to me. Her challenge, her belief was this. Go to that fast food place. And I saw this on a person's Facebook who's in our community, and it was really phenomenal. Go to that fast food place and stand in line. And then when you get there, let them know that you're really thirsty and ask them for a glass of water. If they give you this glass of water, it'll be brilliant because it's a couple cents off their bottom line, and that doesn't go toward, as she described it, the hate fund. If they don't give you that glass of water, then you can ask them about living out their biblical values. Because if you look to Psalm 25, verse 21, it says, if your enemy is hungry, give him food to eat. If thirsty, give water to drink. And so a bolder move would be to say, I'm hungry, and see, like, do I get something back, or do I have to pay that $3? But she was just going with, just ask for water. Just let him know you're thirsty. And so she was testing the beliefs. And some creative organizations this week invited folks who believe in equality for LGBT and Q folks that they would give money in the amount of what a sandwich would cost. So express your belief in this way. And what I did come to see is actually employees of the fast food chain started to stand up and say, our beliefs aren't quite the same as our founder and owner. And even one part of that chain here in Sacramento is part of the Rainbow Chamber of Commerce. Beliefs are just polarizing. Like, no matter how you cut it or how you hold it, beliefs get us all tangled up. And they're fighting words in so many different ways. So Jesus was feeding 5,000 people and gathering up the fragments of what was left over after that meal. And the folks go to him and they say, what sign are you going to give us so that we may see and believe you? Like, even back in Jesus' day, we want to believe you. Prove it to us. Show us. Where do you line up? We want to know. Make us believe what you're saying. What work are you performing? Prove it. Make us believe. Not up here in our heads is what Jesus is thinking about, or not even here, as preachers have said for so long, like here in our hearts, but we're talking belief in our gut. Belief down in our stomach is what we're going to talk about this week. And it says this in John 6, our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. And Jesus said to them, very truly I tell you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but it was God who gives you the true bread from heaven. The bread of God is that which comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And they said to him, give us this always. It's like this, we'll take that. Give it all right now. And Jesus says, I am the bread of life. All of these layers of meaning, what is this bread? What is that chicken? We're fighting over what does it mean and how are we going to hold on to it? And Jesus says to them after they ask him this question, what must we do to perform the works of God? Jesus answered, this is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he sent. And this is where the Greek became fascinating to me this week, because that word believe gets used in such, like we have this strong understanding of what believe means, and it means the same thing in all times and in all places. And what I started to think about as I was looking at the original text and at some of the scholars who've written about this, the word is actually believing in to. Got that? Believing in to. So it's not believe in him who sent. It's more like this. You are believing into him, which may be hard for us in this contemporary day and time to get our heads around, because we like to think of ourselves as like, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. I do it all by myself. I am what I have created is kind of our modern way, especially here in this country, way of thinking about it. So we need to try as best we can to let go of that for a moment. Because in Jesus's day, the whole identity of a person was built around a community, or the collective, as they would say it. So in a collectivist society, when we say who we are, we actually have to say in relationship to everybody that's gone before us. So an example of that is this. They say Jesus, but it's not just Jesus. It's Jesus, son of Joseph from Nazareth. Or, I am a descendant of Abraham, right? So all the time when we're identifying ourselves in Jesus' day, it's in relationship to those who've gone before me, those who've shaped me. I cannot have an identity outside of the ones that I'm like trusting in, I'm putting my name with. I'm believing into them. I'm coming out of that. So when Jesus asks people to believe into him, believing into him might look something like this. Let go of the name and identity of I am Eric, the son of, and go with I am Eric, child of God, follower of Jesus. So it's about lining up. You know who society says you should line up with, but believe in God has sent me to come into the world and follow this. Align your life with Jesus. It's a very different way of thinking about what belief is and what belief means. It's profound to me. Believing into, or one person this week in a prayer group talked about it as, belief is, to her, it's setting her heart toward God. This goes even another step beyond setting just our heart toward God. This is about identifying our life with that person, aligning ourselves with Jesus as the bread of life. And to me, maybe one of the best examples this week of somebody who did that, realigned her life around something that she believed in, was Gabby Douglas. She said, at age 14, I'm going to go away from my mom and from my siblings, and I'm going to align my life, believe in this coach who I trust in, and put everything I have in that way. I'm going to sacrifice so much to maybe potentially follow my dream, this lure of gold medals. And it's not just Gabby. Like the collectivist identity, it can be seen in the Fab Five, right? It's when they celebrate and they're trying to support one another in all those ways. And I watch it in the Chinese synchronized divers, and I just thought, wow. And it's not just in team sports either. Serena Williams, maybe some of you saw her individual gold medal. She could not even speak afterwards. And she did this really cool dance that I just wanted to do for you right there. But she does that because there's no words for her at that moment. She had just won Wimbledon there. Let's be honest, no one thought anyone could at all be on the court with her. It wasn't like she could have known going into that match, I should think about what I'm going to say after I win a gold medal, because you're going to win the gold medal. You're Serena Williams, right? Like, you're going to win this. She can't even talk about it after she's finished, though. She's just at a loss because it seems bigger to her. She's won so many tournaments, but this one was different because she was a part of a collective, of a community. Belief empowered her to do this and to line up in those ways. As I was in a group this week, we were talking about the Olympics as kind of a metaphor for the kingdom of God. And it's like every metaphor, it has its challenges, but the Olympics as God's people from all over coming together. And think how much these folks have sacrificed. I know I could be alone in this, but I find myself, and it's a little uncomfortable at times, but I find myself watching the Olympics, and at various moments, I actually, like, I feel it in my stomach, and then I have water in my eyes. And people call that tears. And it just kind of overtakes me, and I'm not a person that, like, confesses this very often, but it happens to me with the Olympics. And it happens in different ways, like when I don't even expect it. My heart just kind of sinks down. And I'm amazed by how these athletes are believing in themselves and in their coaches, in their training. They believe in sacrificing more than I can even fathom to end up there on that medal stand. And maybe you heard that commercial, the one person says, I haven't had dessert in 6 years. I keep thinking, I can't do 6 days. 6 years? That is discipline, sacrifice, hard work. And the truth is, more often than not, they end up with all that, they fail. And that's where the tears come up for me too. It was watching John Orozco from the Bronx. Like, I wanted this guy. And when he gets done with that pommel horse, I just thought, it was crushing. It was crushing. Or there are times where you see them overextend, or they risk and they fail. They lag in the water. They miss the mark. Sometimes even when they win, they're like disoriented and they're at a loss for words, and then I struggle for them there. Like, I want them to be able to say something afterwards, like have some words to share with folks. But it's almost like they have this new alignment as an Olympian and then as an Olympic medalist, and they haven't quite lived into it enough to even be able to know what to say or how to say it to anybody around them. They've been setting their heart on gold, aligning their lives with coaches and teams and dreams. We get caught up in those emotions. And one of the reasons I think we track medals and do the things that we do is because when we live in the depths of those emotions, like I experience every now and then on the couch, like I can't stay there for my whole life. So I want to like count medals or do something to distract myself from the realness of it, from the vulnerability of it, from this community that's taking shape around it. And so we pull back because it's too much. The fullness of it just, it's too much to bear. Those Olympic athletes might remind you, as they do me, of some of those folks who've gone before us, the saints. We talked about them during Lent, as people who have lived out the faith with such profound intensity. They've sacrificed so much, literally some of them, their lives taken from them. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Archbishop Oscar Romero, Mother Teresa. These are folks whose beliefs compelled them to follow Jesus, to sacrifice everything. But one of the things we remember in their stories is that it wasn't the gold that they were going to earn. It was God's love that was working inside of them, and they just had to live that out. They just couldn't do otherwise. It just was inside of them. It's like the seal of God was simply working on them all along. So the lure of gold compels some folks to sacrifice and believe in this quest for the Olympic medals, and the lure of God calls followers to align ourselves with bread of life, believe in Jesus as bread of life, and that belief means putting ourselves in line with Him. It causes us to live differently, to be differently, to trust that Jesus is the bread of life now and always. And so it's not always clear to me what that actually looks like aligning my life with Jesus in any particular moment. But what helps me is sometimes to look back and also to look at Scripture, because the folks who were gathering around Jesus, it confused them too. They were literally fighting over, you say you're the bread of life? What is the bread of life? Give me that bread. They confused the literal and the metaphor, and they couldn't figure out where to land, and it made them angry, and it made them believe that the other people weren't right, and they must have the only way. So what does it look like to believe in Jesus, to align ourselves with the one who is the bread of new life? Well, I'm not always certain what that is or how to live into that. But as these Olympians rise to the heights and the possibilities of the Olympic spirit, what I know is that people around me this week were falling into a trap and into anger about lines, fighting not over bread, but over chicken sandwiches. And we were filled with anger, fighting over this literal and symbolic thing. And I like to think that Jesus and following Jesus, believing in Jesus, aligning ourselves in Jesus might look something like this. It might look like a few people sitting around a kitchen table, reflecting together on how they've been doing harm, on how they've been doing good, and how they've been staying in love with God. And in that process, they're bantering back and forth, and they start to talk about the politics of belief. And they start to talk about the significance of chicken sandwiches. And they're wondering, because they know that beliefs matter, but they're not sure about how to live it out in their lives. So they throw out ideas, and some of those ideas are risky, and some of them seem doomed to fail. Some of them require sacrifice, changing who we are to align in another way. And then someone in that kitchen table says, you know, Jesus fed people. He went to those on the margins and he broke bread. So what if we found a local restaurant that feeds folks really good chicken? Like really good chicken, not like fast food manna kind of stuff that's just temporary. real, like battered and fried home-cooked chicken. What if we did that? And what if we bought some? And what if we went down to the Gay and Lesbian Center here in Sacramento, where 30 or 40 teenagers gather every Wednesday night? And what if we just brought a meal and shared it? What if we invite the folks that our world seems so hell-bent on demonizing to say, let's break bread? It seems like if we're going to align ourselves with Jesus, we're going to have to do it in a way that might be consistent with how he did. So what if we tried it on? What if we saw that our identity, it's bound up in theirs, in one another's? We're no different. What if it's that kind of a collectivist community that we're called to be in the midst of a world that wants to divide and conquer? What if that's our way of believing in Jesus, lining up with him to break bread with folks who the powers that be keep trying to crush and change? It's no Olympic medal and Bob Costas won't be there to interview, but what if that chicken tastes like bread of life? What if this is the day that Jesus wants us to believe, to align our lives with him, not in our heads or not even in our hearts, but way down in our stomachs, in our guts? And what if that's actually God's work? What if that in and of itself is God's work and our belief this day and every day?
Pass me not, O gentle Savior. Hear my humble cry. While on others thou art calling, to